A very warm welcome to our third podcast episode. By now we have already become a bit of a well-oiled team. Let us see how things do unfold today.
There are no more excuses, if I may just jump in here. There are no more excuses. Yeah.
We always like to do that. Exactly. We have no more excuses now. Everything has to work now. Our main topic for today is security as well as audit compliance in Billbox, data security and archiving. Legal frameworks. Now, that might indeed sound to you like a bit of a boring legal presentation at first. I really have to say yes, let us just take a look and see how we can actually go about dealing with these terms. How exactly is all of the data actually being stored at Billbox?
That is indeed a very broad and major question. Basically, it is always stored in an audit-proof way with a very major focus on that, focusing on words as boring as compliance. Every country has certain guidelines there. We can definitely dive into that in a moment, why that actually is, why those requirements exist, how data needs to be stored. There are completely different reasons for that, and usually also very different stakeholders. But how is this data stored? Basically, in a way that ensures absolutely no unauthorized person can access it under any circumstances. Basically, it is done in such a way that it remains fully traceable for authorized users and that it is also stored in a neat and proper manner, as independently as possible from any of the things that might change over the course of time. That's the basic question to start with. If we want to talk tech, we can certainly do that too. But that is basically the reason why Billbox does things this way, because these naturalization periods are usually very long in the different countries, between 1 and 30 years. Such data would have to be stored. And that's why you have a huge responsibility as a business owner, sometimes also as an auditor or tax advisor, regarding these retention periods.
What kind of data are we actually talking about?
We are mainly talking about data relevant to accounting and also about data that is relevant to taxes. So we are talking about, generally speaking, with companies, we mean their outgoing invoices. So how did the company generate revenue? They need to file those properly. They must keep their incoming invoices. What kind of costs did the company have? They also have payroll data showing exactly who got paid how much money and for what specific reason, and then they often also have contract documents and papers that can somehow serve to prove these other three factors. There are business documents in the strict sense, which are more like accounts receivable, payables, and payroll. And then there's also supporting stuff like contracts and sometimes correspondence, delivery notes, and all that kind of thing, which you then use to prove that what's written in those business documents is actually correct.
Okay, and if I am not a Billbox customer at the moment, what is the difference then? So where do I save my data and what will that look like with Billbox? Why is this relevant for me now as a Billbox customer?
So if I do not have Billbox, I will first have an issue. These documents that need to be archived find their way into an organization through quite a lot of different fragmented channels. So if we just take the incoming invoices, they arrive via, I think we already talked about this in the last episode, it used to be through letters, via scanners, via emails, via portals where they're downloaded, via travel expenses, via some mobile apps. So they enter a company in many different ways at first. And in most countries, the tax authorities want to make sure that these are all actual outgoing, incoming, and other invoices. They basically ask, first of all, where is the original? Which one is the actual document that can prove it is indeed the real deal? And it's the same with outbound invoices. In many companies, people always think, but we have this system. But if you look closely at how the company actually communicates with its customers, it often happens through multiple channels and multiple systems. If you do not have the Billbox in place, then those incoming and outgoing channels tend to be quite a bit more fragmented. And whenever you actually have the Billbox in place, it completely standardizes both the incoming and outgoing invoices. So you don't have to worry as much about whether that was actually the real receipt, the real invoice, or the real data record.
Could you elaborate on that a bit more?
So then, what exactly is a typical accounting system? The accounting system is, I do not know, BMD, which is an accounting system that is extremely common in Austria. Or perhaps DATEV in Germany, Edison or Abacus or Cegid in France. These are systems where the accounting then takes place. On the way to the accounting department, there are indeed various different kinds of touch points. Like, how exactly does that work then? Maybe someone who wants to send an invoice over to Billbox just sends you an invoice by email. What I mean now. And you in the company without Billbox, you wouldn't forward it to an inbox. Now, it would no longer be possible for an outside third party to clearly prove whether or not this is indeed the original invoice. But if you had a big filter like that in front of your company now and said, wait, if you look like an invoice, please come through this filter or through this sieve or through this funnel into my process, then that makes it a lot easier for you. That way, invoices coming in twice or not coming at all, or coming in the wrong formats, or invoices just not complying with your requirements will be avoided. Into your workflow, into your accounting, into your bank, into your reporting, into your systems. Billbox, for example, automatically does so.
Okay, I think I understand that a bit better. But what does audit-proof archiving actually mean?
Revision, I think, comes from Latin and means, I believe, looking back. So, that means it comes up quite often. Now, I would distinguish between internal and external audit. So, with an internal audit, what actually happens is that a company hires someone to check if everything within the company is going by the book. Mostly, very large companies have an internal audit department. They make sure that no risks arise, no fraud, that absolutely nothing illegitimate happens that the company does not want. And when it comes to external audits, it's very often about, in one case, tax audits, whether it's tax compliant or also in the case of M&A, mergers, acquisitions, for example. When there's a change of shareholders in companies, then of course someone buying shares wants to avoid taking on any risks if possible. And then you will usually check beforehand to make double sure that everything was and is correct. But very, very often, mostly regarding the precise question, where does this come from, in my experience, from the tax authorities who want to ensure that what the companies submit as accounting in the respective country is also reasonably or as far as possible completely true, because of course, taxes are payable on profits, taxes are payable on capital gains, and of course it's also about that the value-added tax, which exists in most of the countries, is properly accounted for, because we're talking about very, very large amounts. Imagine in Germany there are two main rates, 19 and 7%. Most services, or almost all, have 19%. So if a company has 10 million in revenue, that includes 1.9 million euros in VAT, which is also paid by companies receiving services, can be claimed back from the tax office because VAT is a consumption tax. That is precisely the reason why tax offices all around the entire globe actually have to pay close attention to ensure that input tax is not being abused in any way. There are regularly major attempts to claim input tax without perhaps actually having paid any. We've all heard of that. It happened with securities, a huge scandal in Germany, Cum-Ex. People claimed dividends even though they weren't actually entitled to receive them. And as long as there are, I believe, huge sums of money in financial systems, there will always be people who are trying to exploit them or even abuse them in a criminal way.
And how exactly does Billbox help me in achieving audit-proof compliance, or should I say, in becoming much more audit-proof?
BillBox basically always keeps a very close eye on audit proofing and compliance in each and everything it does, and then says, okay, we will make sure that the entire process runs in such a way that the business owners and companies working with BillBox do not even have these risks in the first place, and that they also don't have these risks, so that when it comes to their retention, innovation, compliance, and tax duties, they are definitely perfectly prepared.
And they don't have these risks, so they're perfectly prepared for their retention, innovation, compliance, and tax duties.
So, keep digging.
Yeah, I'm not really sure what that looks like in practice. I mean, what's the benefit for me? Could that possibly be because BillBox is able to, like, I don't really know, back up my own data in a completely different way? Why is that so much? Yeah, why is it so much better when dealing with audit compliance if I say, okay, I'm a BillBox customer? What difference does it make whether I'm a BillBox customer or not?
I think that a really big point is one of the, we call them the 8 USPs of BillBox, the unique selling points. And one of those is integrity. We translate that as completeness. This means that BillBox, with its routing system, is designed to fully map the accounts receivable and accounts payable process. What we mean by that is 100.0% and not just 99.8%. This means that with BillBox as a platform, if you want to picture it that way, we stand right in front of our clients' email and physical mailboxes, and no matter whatever comes in. And whatever goes out, ideally and usually goes through BillBox into the organization. And that's how BillBox can make sure that it's complete, and it can also automatically check this compliance and say, okay, this here is to stick with that image. This really is the supplier's original invoice, or this really is the original invoice to the customer. And then it can also be marked with this quote-unquote digital stamp of authenticity showing, yes, you can actually verify and prove that this is indeed the one, before it enters the organization and before it gets refined or modified by all kinds of other systems and so on. So, that is actually built right into our very own logic, that we say, yes, indeed, this completeness is indeed part of the requirements and what we automatically ensure with this platform.
And I also remember that, for example, the system is also able to detect that an invoice is a duplicate or looks very similar to one we've already received. So I guess all these tools are probably also there to make sure that there's only this one original.
That is actually a very good example. That is true, and of course that works, but you can only do that if you are really the authority on both input and output, because if absolutely everything basically goes through it, it is also a whole lot easier and far more reliable, and then to say, oh look, there is the exact same number three times, or this travel expense report looks incredibly similar that has already been done once before. And of course, this entire process becomes all the more precise, fully comprehensible, and automated the more you actually hand over this task. Not just speed, cost effectiveness, and ergonomics, but also compliance, completeness, and so forth. Defined that as well, and has made it into a part of our job.
Yeah. Maybe as a final topic, legal frameworks. I think we touched on that briefly right at the beginning. Or you said, oh, maybe we can dive into that again in a bit. What does that actually look like in different countries? How exactly can BillBox actually manage to handle this level of complexity regarding audit compliance? Or how does BillBox react to that then?
If we really want to put it in very simple terms, the fundamental logic of taxation and accounting has absolutely nothing whatsoever to do with any single specific country. Instead, I think at some point the merchants of Venice introduced something like double entry bookkeeping. That actually does originate from Venice, as far as I'm aware, yes. the vast majority of civilized countries have tax-funded public welfare systems. And those are indeed just some of the logical principles that, as a consequence, have led to compliance requirements in every single country. And those are indeed country-specific. Some tax authorities are faster. They say you don't have to keep your receipts for that long, especially in the more modern younger countries. The required retention periods are very often quite a bit shorter because they tend to have a more digital setup than is the case in an established country like Germany. So you have a 10-year retention period, and for example, for subversions, because, well, and let's not make everyone too happy here, I'll say this as neutrally or value-free as possible, because you simply want to have a longer period in which a tax auditor, a tax audit by the tax office, can take another look at the files. If you imagine how you would audit this faster now or online or whatever, then you probably wouldn't need to look at it again in 10, 9, or 8 years, whether everything in 2017 was completely above board in the company. But that means these are country-specific requirements. Every single country has some kind of specific requirements regarding where exactly all of the accounting data has to be stored, in which formats it needs to be made available, and within what specific time frame. But in most cases, the common thread is that they must be made available quickly, understandably, and without any kind of special technical equipment to a tax auditor or external auditor. This is a common thread running through almost all civilized countries, and Billbox would like to be active in all countries. For suppliers, business partners, clients, basically in all countries. There are always these little exceptions. We once said we'd exclude certain countries where we said we don't really have that much of an interest in being active. This aligns right now with countries that are highly polarizing in public perception, which might be incredibly interesting business-wise, but perhaps also have their downsides. We excluded those early on, but in all the others, we'd actually really like to be useful, active, and make a difference.
Okay. But even though we are currently talking about digitalization and things like that, I still proceed on the assumption that there must surely be a few male and female customers out there who still receive their invoices on paper. So, what actually happens to those? I mean, if I were to imagine that all of my invoices just completely disappear, and then I see my invoice for the very first time inside of the Billbox system, how should I picture that when we talk about archiving for 10 years in Germany? What does that look like if I'm a Billbox customer?
Well, the absolute vast majority of Billbox clients also order and book, quote-unquote, to put it casually, compliance. So regarding this topic, yeah, Billbox ensures and can guarantee that it is the original. For all of these specific customers of ours, we will always offer a physical inbox. For, and this mainly refers to incoming invoices, even for those very few that are still around today. When you came into this world, the invoice traffic in Europe, I'd say, was 90%. And there was maybe 10% of EDI and stuff like that. We talked about that in the last episode. They already had that in place at big industrial firms and clients. But back then, it was still a really huge amount of physical mail. And then came, wow, I'd say around, 2008, 2009, or 2010, like, wow, email is finally starting to become okay. There was a huge outcry. And so many people thought it was the work of the devil. But that does mean we are indeed actually seeing that even in a country like Italy, where we are partners with Billbox in the so-called SDI system. So in quite a few countries, we are officially accredited partners of this national system, and we are in Italy too. And over there, you do not actually have any emails or paper-based invoices at all anymore. But that's not entirely true, because of course there's cross-border traffic. And in the very first place, it is also true that our Italian clients do indeed from time to time receive a letter sent to them by an Austrian lawyer or from, I don't quite know, maybe a certified public accountant from the Bahamas. And it says on it, I'd like a fee, so it's called an invoice. And then, even in Italy, there are things like fattura di cortesia, a courtesy invoice, because sometimes it's so abstract for companies to get that kind of data. It would be quite nice if I could actually read something. I mean, you even have that in countries like Estonia, Lithuania, Finland, Sweden, which are already very, very far ahead when it comes to digitization. There's suddenly still emails and paper. We just say, no. You're very welcome to still hand over the paper. But then even that should ideally go through the bill box into the workflows, into the systems and everything you'll then find, because then you can easily handle exactly these topics of completeness, audit compliance, all that stuff that's a boring topic today, so much better and oh, so much more efficiently.
Is there anything else you can think of that you'd kind of like to explain at this point? Otherwise, I don't really have any more questions right now.
Yeah, maybe just a quick assessment. And we are completely and fully aware of the fact that, first of all, this is only relevant for a very small portion of humanity. In 9 out of 10 cases, things are never eaten as hot as they're cooked, as they say in the Rhineland. It is just that over the course of the last 20 years, we have seen quite a few cases, both with non-clients and our clients, where this particular topic suddenly becomes extremely relevant. Because you change the corporate structure, sell off shares, go public, have a case of fraud, money has gone missing, or someone, oh my goodness, has input tax issues. Suddenly, absolutely everyone starts looking closely at the process, and then the big search for the person who is held responsible begins. And that is what we actually always prepare our client for, this very day, and say, wait, this sounds incredibly nerdy, and it really is incredibly nerdy, but it's just one of those topics. Like, what if, and then you also have a high visibility vest in your car and a spare tire, where you say to yourself, how often does that actually happen to you with a flat tire? But it is indeed just absolutely terrible if you find yourself stranded somewhere on some rainy autumn day in the dark or at night, and you have neither a warning triangle nor a mobile phone, nor a spare tire nor a jack, then you're just really in trouble. And we plan for this moment in everything that we do.
Great, thank you very much. I think I can wish you a nice evening now. And we'll talk in the next few days for the next podcast episode.
So ready.
Thank you and goodbye.